Hi, I'm Jesse Hirsch. Welcome to the Future Herd. Some conversations reveal a system. Others reveal the gap between how a system imagines itself and how it is actually experienced. This episode with Jordan Domio sits squarely in that gap. What Jordan brings into focus is not agriculture as an industry, but agriculture as a lived pathway. One that is far less visible, far less accessible, and far more uneven than the sector often acknowledges. There is a persistent story the industry tells about itself, that opportunity is there for those willing to work, that the next generation simply needs to step up. Yet what Jordan surfaces, calmly but unmistakably, is how incomplete that story is. Because participation is not evenly distributed. Exposure is not universal. And the idea that someone might see themselves in agriculture, might even consider it as a future, is often the result of a very specific conditions and circumstances that many may never encounter. From that starting point, the conversation shifts. It becomes less about recruitment and more about recognition. Less about labor shortages, more about imagination shortages. Who gets to see agriculture up close? Who gets invited into decision-making spaces early enough to matter? And who is treated as a stakeholder versus an afterthought, or even worse, an opponent? What makes this discussion compelling is that it doesn't settle for critique. Jordan points towards the subtle but powerful interventions that can change trajectories. Moments of inclusion, early responsibility, being taken seriously before you feel ready. These are not structural reforms in the traditional sense. They're cultural opportunities. And yet, they may be the most decisive factor in whether the sector reproduces itself or, like a phoenix, transforms into something even more powerful and radiant. By the end, the question is no longer whether agriculture has a next generation. It's whether it is willing to recognize them, empower them, and reshape itself accordingly. Jordan is another one of those young leaders that the moment you listen, the moment you start to understand their perspective, their experience, their potential, the more you just want to hand over to the reins to young people like Jordan. And perhaps that's one of the opportunities or consequences of conversations like this. Here we go. Jordan, welcome to the Future Herd.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, I love to start our discussion with a really wild and abstract question to kind of set the context. And it's, what does the future mean to you?
Great question. And I think there's a lot of parts that go into that. But the main part that I focus on is the continuity of the industry. So you need new people coming in. You need new ideas coming in. So for me, focusing on the younger people in agriculture, we need to be fostering that and giving them the outlet to explore and contribute and seeing where they can go, because they're going to be the old guys one day that are continuing this. So giving them that platform is a great way to start.
Right on. And paradoxically, I would point out that as a practicing futurist, it's pretty rare that I find young people interested in the future. And that's the paradox, that it's often the old people, those least likely to see the future, who tend to be most concerned with it, versus I find the younger you are, the more you kind of take it for granted. So I'm curious, I do want to get into kind of how you got into leadership and the organizations that you're involved in. But I kind of want to start with this idea. How often when you deal with young people, when you engage with fellow young people, do you find that they are open to the future, or is it something that you kind of have to tease out to them because maybe they're just thinking about the moment and the present and what they're going to do today?
I definitely think you get both. I think there are the few standout younger people who are like, really gung-ho about it and they're like, no, I have a plan, I want to do something, and they have that drive, they have that ambition. But then you will get kind of just the general younger population of, they haven't either been exposed to anything yet or they haven't been given the chance to experience. So it's not that they don't care about the future, it's they don't have a set idea of what they want for it yet because they haven't been given the opportunity to explore it or think about it. I think once you give people that opportunity or put that thought in their head of, hey, what do you want to see for the industry you're in? Like, your opinion matters. Then they kind of take that and roll with it. But I do think it's both. You have the people who aren't like, they just don't know that they can have an opinion yet. And then you have the people like, no, I have an opinion. You're going to listen to me have it.
Right on. And I think you just made a really brilliant insight that kind of rings through a lot of the conversations I've had on this podcast, which is, at some point, someone gave permission, someone gave an invitation, someone said, hey, you're a leader now. And it created this psychological shift where all of a sudden, to your point, people said, yeah, I do have opinions, I do have perspectives. When did that happen to you? Right. What was the point in your life that you realized, you know what? What I think actually matters, and maybe I should be expressing myself accordingly.
I will say for me personally, I've had it throughout my life. I've always been a very type A person to begin with. I thank my mother, who's a high up government worker, that she's type A. So I inherited that in the kind of policy procedure mindset from her. So I've always been told throughout my life, whether it was in high school or sports or university, that, oh, you're driven, you have that kind of want to lead or do more, you should explore that. So every time I've focused on something different. So whether it was in high school, I was in all the clubs, or now in the ag industry, I've kind of just, every time I get into a new room, it's like, oh, hey, you have this going for you. Let's kind of go with that. So I feel like every time I try something new, someone points me out being like, hey, you can go further with this.
Right on. And, you know, I want to take a tangent there only because I think you highlighted a really interesting method, because what I heard you describe in my world is kind of mapping. Like, when I play a video game, I'm going to map out the territory. Or to your metaphor, when I go to an event, I'm going to map out who's exhibiting. I'm going to map out the associations, and I'm going to figure out kind of how I tap into that. How has that worked for you? Because obviously it's worked really well, but it's something maybe a lot of people take for granted in terms of trying to find out where you fit or where to connect or where you'll be valued or where you'll be useful. I'd love for you just to elaborate on that just for a moment.
I think, like you said, it is mapping. So specifically, if you're at an event, an agricultural event, there's going to be people there who have similar mindsets of you. That's why you're all in the room. So the best way to learn about anything is to talk to somebody who deals with it every day. So if there's a career you want, if there's an area of research you're interested, if there's anything you want, finding someone who knows about that is going to be the best way for you to learn more about that. So for myself, anytime I went to a networking event or a trade show, it's, well, who is doing something I want to know more about or I'd like to potentially see myself doing? I'm going to go talk to them and see where that leads. And everyone who is invested in something will gladly tell you about what they're doing. We all love our research, or we all love our jobs to some degree. So we're going to tell you, we're going to talk to you about it. So it's nice to have someone who is interested in it. And as soon as you have someone who has that kind of, oh, hey, I'm interested in what you do, I want to talk more about it, the floodgates open and they're going to tell you everything they have to know about it.
Well, and again, I think you've identified a brilliant tactic. And I say, certainly in my own case, people don't realize this, but I am quite socially awkward. And the way I've always managed that is to just ask questions, right? That when I go to an event, if you just get people talking about what they're excited about, you get what you want in terms of their knowledge, and they get what they want in terms of them being to express themselves. Now, you said something I also want to peel off. And while obviously today I do want to talk about the Junior Farmers Association of Ontario and kind of the role that it plays in sectoral leadership and yada, 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 But you kind of alluded that part of your methodology was just finding the clubs, joining the clubs, finding the different organizations that, you know, you could be part of, you could contribute to. So what were some of the groups? What were some of the clubs that as you were growing up, as you were kind of, you know, developing your skills as a leader that really benefited you or that you found a lot of value from?
Growing up, I always enjoyed the outdoors. I grew up on a farm. We were outside all the time. I enjoyed that. So which kind of sparked my beginning interest in like the environment itself. I studied environmental sciences at school, and that's kind of, there's an environmental club everywhere. So I kind of got involved with that at the high school and the university level. And then from there, it's environment and agriculture are so intersected that you can't talk about one without talking about the other. So no matter how hard I tried to get away from agriculture in my schooling years, I always found myself back into it. And it's like, well, I'm never escaping it, so I might as well just go with it. And I really love that. So it was, getting into the special interest clubs you have, getting from there, and then it guides you into a further, more in-depth interest that you might have. And then from there, it's the Ontario Federation of Agriculture is where I started my journey in the general ag organizations. And from being in there and people wanting to hear I was the youngest person in the room, so they wanted to hear what I had to say and why I was there. And then luckily that connection led me down the path that I am now. And it was their recommendation to look into the Junior Farmers Association of Ontario. And we've kind of just kept rolling from there.
On. And I think, again, another important tip for any young person listening to us today is find the room where you are the youngest, because it grants you a kind of instant authority, right? Like you just have to stand up and go, hey, I'm the future. Listen to me. And people will. It's remarkable how that trick is really quite effective. Now, go ahead.
No. Oh, I was gonna, it's fun having that one thing that sets you apart from everybody, because that makes you stand out. So whether you're the youngest, whether you're the only like female or male in the room, anything like that, it helps to kind of propel and give you that platform to speak on at starts. And then you just make sure you're talking about something you care about, and that makes sense.
And to your point, no matter what room you're in, there's something about you that is different from everyone else. You just have to know what that is and be able to present it as a value proposition. You said something else that I want to digress on, only because I love these sprawling, random style conversations. I'm going to evoke a academic term or a technical term called intersectionality. And this refers to when, you know, different domains are kind of combined to make the sum greater than the whole. And you evoked that when you talked about how you were pursuing environmental studies, almost trying to get away from your kind of agricultural roots. But then you kind of realized that the benefit was bringing the two together. I'd love for you to unpack that. And I'd love for you to talk more about the way in which, you know, combining these worlds and connecting these worlds creates opportunities unto itself.
Well, I think it's safe to say no one cares more about the environment than farmers, because they're heavily reliant on it. That's how they make their money. They care about what's going on in the soil, in their ecosystems. So farmers are environmentalists to some degree, if you want to say it like that. But no, it was very interesting that farmers are trying to keep their land the way, like better their land and better the environment in which they're growing in, because that makes it easier for them to do their job. And when you get into the environmental side of things, they're looking at it on a bit more of a broader scope, but everything about ecology or like hydrology or anything like that can be brought back into agriculture and be like, hey, well, we're learning this in just environments in general. How do you bring that back, and how does it make growing our crops or farming better in general? Because we're all using the land and we all want to keep the land productive.
Well, and you evoked a really interesting authority mechanism, that because you were able to straddle both of those worlds, that gives you the confidence to assert quite rightly that farmers are environmentalists, that they're kind of the original environmentalists in terms of thinking about the long-term sort of stewardship of the land and the climate and the environment as a whole. And I think there's a lot of farmers who are insecure to say that, right? Like, they sort of in the back of their mind know that they do a really good job of taking care of the environment, you know, through their operations. But they're intimidated by people who they don't understand, who might be critical of them. Yet you have that leadership ability to be able to connect those dots and say, actually, no, we can assert our leadership in this area. We can assert our authority in this area. Have you encountered pushback, or have you, you know, how did you come? Because you use that framing quite confidently. How did you arrive there? And again, I think you may take it for granted, but there may be other people who are going, wow, Jordan, that's pretty cool. How did you get to that point?
Well, no, and I definitely think there is the stigmatism of, well, farmers are just taking everything from the environment. So how can you be benefiting the environment, or how can cash cropping be good for the environment when you're tilling the land and all that? And it's, well, yes, there's definitely things that don't help the environment, but farmers are going to be the first to be like, well, how do I make the soil work better for me so I don't have to put as much money into it, especially in today's climate where inputs are so expensive and they're only going to keep getting more expensive. How do we make the land do better for us? And that brings it back to ecology. And like, if you have a good ecosystem, everything's going to do better. You're going to have better organic matter in your soil. You're going to have better biodiversity of the bugs in your environment that are helping pollinate. And the more bugs you have, the less pest pressures there actually are, because they're competing each other. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into that. So yes, farmers might not be seen as the true stewards that we want to think environmentalists are, but you'll ask any farmer, and if you give them away, like, hey, I can decrease your fertilizer cost by increasing how your ecosystem works, they're going to be the first to jump on that, because who doesn't want to save money when you can?
Well, and this speaks really to the mission of the Future Herd and what I want to accomplish, in that my hypothesis is that not only do we have a range of phenomenal leaders like yourself, but that you are carrying the kind of knowledge that we need to be elevating into the public consciousness, into the policy environment, into the way in which we imagine this stuff. Because to your point, I've for a long time heard about how farmers were like destroying soil and, you know, doing these practices that would devastate it. But then as soon as I got into TikTok and started looking and listening to farmers and their practices, I realized that's really outdated, that they've already adapted a lot of their practices in really remarkable and innovative ways. It's just the stereotypes remain in spite of the practices having changed in many cases quite radically. So let's use that as a hook to start to transition to the role of organizations like the ones that you've been involved in. How does that knowledge spread? Like, how does, let's say, you know, if one farmer or if one researcher comes up with a better way to manage their practices, how do other farmers learn? Like, how does that knowledge kind of spread throughout the industry? Because I'm seeing the results. I know that it is spreading, but I'm still starting to understand exactly how that knowledge mobilization kind of manifests.
It goes back to the, you have to find that room to be in. There's, someone's going to want to talk about it. If a farmer's doing something new and cool and they're proud of it, they want to tell you about it. They want to show you, hey, look what I've been able to do with my soil. I'm lucky that through the organizations I am with, and especially my day job at the moment is with the Ontario Soil and Crop Improvement Association, we're giving farmers that platform to, hey, have you done something interesting? Why don't you tell more people about it? We'll host an event at your farm, or we'll host a webinar about what you're doing. We'll connect it to the research we've been doing or other institutes have been doing, and we'll share that with people. And luckily there is a lot of, whether it's through OSCIA or your conservation authority or other organizations, there's a lot of funding for people for farmers to access this money to try these new things. So if you look hard enough, someone's going to tell you, or there's information about something you can do, and there'll be someone there to help you or give you more information on it.
And I think that's a really important point to emphasize, that the infrastructure and the support for this kind of knowledge mobilization is starting to come into place, because I think the sector as a whole is not just recognizing that we need to be telling better stories, which is the cliche you keep hearing repeated, but that we need to be empowering these frontline innovators. We need to be elevating these people by running events, by bringing people together. I'm with you 100% there. So let's, for a moment, bring it back to the junior farmers associations. And here, obviously, we're talking about Ontario, but we are trying to appeal to a kind of national audience. So we're assuming that this is happening across the country. Talk about the value and role of getting young farmers together and replicating part of what you're describing, getting everyone into the same room. But also going back to where we started, giving them the social license to realize they're leaders and they're entitled to have a perspective and an opinion.
Well, that's the beauty of junior farmers, is we are a group of young people who have an interest in agriculture, whether you grew up on the farm, work in the industry, or just like agriculture in general. It brings all of those people together. And then it gives you that outlet to talk about what are you doing on their farm, ask people about what they're doing on their farm, or we'll host events where we'll bring in people through junior farmers to talk to our membership on new innovations in research, new like fertilizers or anything coming up. We'll give them the platform to talk to these young people. We'll bring our young people on farm tours to see different things or see different parts of our industry. We'll kind of give them the outlet to explore all that, as well as talk to their peers about it and kind of get a better idea. Junior Farmers is really great for that. And just, we're bringing you into that room of, hey, we're all have the same interest. Let's explore that. Let's see different things throughout the province. Let's see what other people are doing. We're lucky that the Junior Farmers Association, we are working with other provinces, so we are kind of going national with it, of what is BC doing, what is PEI doing. I was just recently in Quebec with their young farmer organization over there, hearing how they do things and then bringing them over and showing them how we do things. So it's nice to have that organization level to do that across the country as well.
Right on. And certainly it would be easy for us to kind of pause there and go, great, yeah, isn't it awesome the way that young people are kind of getting organized? And I often find amongst adults that will be the cliche that, for example, when I was a young leader, you know, adults would always tap me on the head and be like, way to go, buddy. Great job. But they wouldn't actually give me the resources I wanted. They wouldn't give me the power that I wanted. So let me throw you a curveball question, especially given that, you know, you have perspective. You've been involved in this enough that I think you've seen what works and see what doesn't work. Where are the gaps? What are the things when it comes to either specifically the Junior Farmers Association or young farmers in general? Where could we be doing better? Where are the areas that if you did have infinite resources, if these organizations had better support from other elements of the sector, you know, what would you love to see? What do you think's missing? What are the challenges or pain points that are worthy of addressing when it comes to empowering that next generation of leaders?
I think it is giving younger people the resources, whether it's giving them the organization to join where they can do this, whether it's putting the networking events or the crop tours or anything in front of them. There's so many options that it's almost overwhelming, especially in the ag industry, because you have all of these different organizations that are all have some sort of young person component to them. There's almost too many options for some people to choose, but it's great that there is that many options as well, because it lets you either decide on like a more niche interest you have, or you can go to the more general side of things like junior farmers, where we'll give you access to everything. So that's been really nice. I will say the biggest hurdle for young people we're seeing is just the time to do it. We are now at a point where everyone has an off-farm job if you are on farm or if you're not on farm. And we don't have infinite vacation days. We don't have infinite resources to do all that. That's the biggest hurdle, is just finding the time to do it, because a lot of these organizations are geared to people who are on the farm who can have that flexibility to leave, or people who aren't in school, aren't working full time. They kind of seem to miss that we all have lives off the farm now. for the most part. So finding that time is the biggest issue a lot of us are having.
I was going to say, I kind of call it the James Brown effect, in that James Brown at his peak called himself the hardest working man in showbiz. And I kind of find that's how you can describe young farmers, that they're the hardest working people in the agribusiness. Not to say that the adults aren't working really hard too, but it is phenomenal, the work ethic you see, only because there is only a certain amount of time in the day and there's so much that can be done and that people want to do. How do you guys support that? Given that on the one hand, you're young, so you got your health on your side. But on the other hand, I'm sure burnout is another factor that complicates things.
It is. And we're always trying to be cognizant of that. So we do offer a lot of like the mental health or the support side on that, being like, yes, we all love it. We all want to be a part of it, but we do need to appreciate that. We're only human. We only have so many hours in the day. We need to be careful of, yes, we want to be involved in all these things, but we need to make sure we're doing it in a healthy way. Junior Farmers has been great because most of our meetings or anything like that, we've moved it to an online. So we'll have a Zoom meeting or we'll have a webinar. We've incorporated that a lot. Or all of the events we do, we try to have them on a weekend so that you can not have to take time away from your day job if you have one, and you can still come to all these events. So purposely scheduling things around that, or making sure if we have to, like for the executive side of Junior Farmers and the actual like running of the organization, we always try to pair the meetings or the conversations we need to have with a fun social event we're doing as well. So you kind of get the working done, but then the fun part of it. So it's, yes, you're coming out and you're spending your weekend doing Junior Farmer things, but we're having fun and we're still accomplishing and being productive.
Right on. Now, what about the kind of industry relations and industry support? And I say this because certainly I can imagine from the industry side how valuable you guys would appear, not just because there's so much talent that can be identified early and potentially wooed over to various enterprises and operations, but conversely, the education opportunities, right? The opportunities for young people to learn, but also the opportunity for the industry to learn from the fresh ideas and new takes that young people often have. So how's that relationship been, and how has it evolved over the time that you've kind of been involved?
It's really good, actually. So we have a lot of good partnerships with other organizations or commodity groups within the industry. So if we're doing an event, we're going to give them the platform to come talk or network with our young people in exchange for either sponsorship or just their time to come talk to us about something. So we have a lot of good connections with that we've been able to leverage. And then we are a group of young people who are interested and want to take on leadership roles or want to do more in the industry. So it's kind of like, hey, we'll give them all the governance training, we'll give them all the leadership training. And then when they age out or when they're done with the junior side of things and they move into their more adult lives, then you can go and you can join the other more general organizations or the commodity organizations. So we're kind of that stepping stone training ground where, hey, we're going to identify our future leaders. We're going to give them the tools they need to succeed. And then once they've been able to learn all that, then we get to send them out into the broader scope of the world and they can carry on doing everything they've learned here.
Right on. And let's take a moment to kind of digress on that, because I've always found the aging out dynamic of young youth organizations is on the one hand a constant, right? People age, they go from young to old. But different organizations manage that in different ways. And it speaks to, on the one hand, how when people aging out, they may not want to leave. Like I see in sports organizations, that's how people become coaches. That's how people become kind of mentors. But at the same time, you are kind of losing talent and knowledge that, yes, you got to replace. Do you guys think about that? Do you have a process around how people age out and think about whether it's like alumni or just people you know as you age? Because, hey, they were part of Young Farmers too.
No, and we do think about that all the time. And we do luckily have a very strong alumni group who, yes, they know everything. So they don't know everything. They know everything. They've been through this. They've experienced a lot of the things we're still going through now. So it's nice to have that kind of sounding board of the background knowledge of, hey, we're going through this right now. Well, they were doing the same thing in the 90s. So what did they do in the 90s? Can we change that and do that now? Our organization has been going on for 83 years now, so we do have a lot of great people that have come through us, and I like to say, like, junior farmers is a thing, something to be proud of, being a part of it. So a lot of our alumni still like, oh yeah, I was a junior farmer back in the day, and they still hold on to that and enjoy that. Yes, they've moved on, and most of them move on to do something in the ag sector, whether it's commodity groups, other farm organizations, or something. Most of our members move on because you have learned that skills. We don't want to lose that talent. So they find places that they can use that talent elsewhere. And then we still have them as a resource to use when we need them. And we have alumni events that we host every once in a while. We do a lot of networking with our alumni where we'll bring them in and they can meet the new people, and our new people can meet the people who have done this and see, oh, how has junior farmers helped you in your life and in your career? What have you done since that and with all the tools you learned here? So it's nice to still have that connection to them. And just because you've aged out doesn't mean you stop being a junior farmer. You're always a junior farmer, but you just get to use your talents elsewhere.
Right on. Now, let me indulge a kind of personal interest, which, you know, seems relevant given that we're talking about young people. And you kind of reminded it to me when you brought up the 90s, because, you know, as someone who was a young person in the 90s, it was a different world. There were parts of that world that I'd love to have back. Most importantly, the idea that we were all disconnected, that we didn't have smartphones, that no one knew what we were doing when we did it. So let me ask you the question that a lot of adults and old people think about, which is young people in technology, young people in media. I think there's often this false assumption that young people are automatically great at technology and automatically great at media. I'd love for you to address that, but more importantly, I'm curious as to the role that social media, that technology plays in the kind of culture of young farmers, whether that's different from the adult farmers or, you know, whether there's the same diversity that exists regardless of age.
I'll be the first to say I am not good with computers, so please don't ask me to do anything. Luckily, there's other members of Junior Farmers who are, so I always outsource any computer or IT issues to them. So no, we're not all amazing at technology to begin with. There's definitely people who have a knack for it and are better at it, or especially, like, I'm not a social media person. I'm on it, and I always say that I'm only on it because of work, because all of the different organizations I'm with, you need that social media presence, because that is how you reach more people. That's how you widen the scope of what you're working with. So it's an important part, but I'm not good at it, and I'm not going to say I'm good at it. I don't have TikTok. I don't know how to do all of that stuff, but I love watching other people's, and I love seeing what people are doing with it, because it's amazing, and it's an important part. I do think that is something that the younger generation has been able to kind of latch on to and be like, oh, we can reach so many more people because of this. We can be more efficient with our time because of this. So yes, all of our junior farmer meetings, we have a monthly exec meeting, or we have monthly meetings for our local clubs. Half of them have moved online because it makes it more accessible for people to join in on those when you don't have to drive several hours. Ontario is a very big place. It takes multiple hours to get anywhere normally, especially when you're in the rural communities. You're not just going down the street. Everything's at least a 2-hour drive away. So again, we only have so many hours in the day. So I will say we've really been able to go forward with technology and making it easier for getting to people and bringing people in, which I've loved. And I feel bad for the people who did this pre-internet, where we didn't have Zoom or messaging and all of that, because it's so easy for us to do it now. I can't imagine the time commitment it would have been for the people who did it in the 70s prior to all of this. I know at one point they used to do radio meetings where they would just have a radio station where you could tune in, and that's how they did our meetings back in the 70s, which was wild. I couldn't imagine doing that. I don't even know how to set that up these days. So that's pretty cool that they had that technology and were able to go with it back then. But now we have our online meetings, we have our online webinars. We can communicate with the people in the East and the people in the Southwest, no issues. So I enjoy that. And then, yes, the young people have really taken to social media, and all across all platforms, it's a great way to share what we're doing. It's a great way to reach out to people who aren't in our immediate circles and be like, hey, this is what we're doing. If you're interested, here's the platform in which to find us on. Here's how you can be a part of this. and also seeing what other people are doing. I have friends who just will sit there and scroll tractor videos because that's what they enjoy. And honestly, who doesn't enjoy watching a tractor go? And it's really fun to see that.
They're the only way that I can be a farmer is because there are people on YouTube teaching me how to fix my tractor. Otherwise, I would be totally adrift. And to your larger point, I think that there is a kind of culture around the way in which we learn that social media does allow, and it's the intergenerational part that interests me. And I will, of course, selfishly say that podcasts have both changed the long time I spend in a truck doing something as basic as going to the feed store, but it also makes chores that much more enjoyable because I'm able to listen to conversations and content. Now, I want to use that as a transition to talk about policy and talk about policy both in an abstract sense and a specific sense. I will say, as a kind of intro, what blows me away about the agricultural sector is how many people care about policy, get engaged in policy, especially compared to the general population, where most people don't care about policy at all until it's something sensational that affects them directly. But people in ag tend to be really informed and really engaged. Is that true at the young person level? Like, does junior farmers talk about policy? Are there young people who start thinking about whether it's environmental policy, whether it's about farm policy, whether it's about trade policy? I mean, give me a sense as to what the literacy and engagement levels are like.
You get the people who are really into policy from a young age and they take it and run with it. But I will say it goes back to people just might not have experienced policy or policy development yet. So luckily, as junior farmers, we can give them that kind of insight into, oh, you haven't, like, this hasn't come up in your daily life yet because you're young. But now that you're starting to get into the industry, nothing happens without policy. Policy is the framework to make everything happen. So it's an important thing that you learn. And we have a policies and procedures committee where we not only discuss the policies of our own organization, but the policies going on at government or other things that affect us in agriculture. And we have opinions on it and we talk about it and we make it more digestible to our members as well, being like, hey, this is what's going on in the world right now. This is why you should be listening to it, or this is what you should be taking away from this. So no, it's junior farmers is really heavily involved in policy. We're lucky that we have a bunch of great people who are either in the ag industry or outside of the ag industry in policy development that are also part of us. So it makes it easier to translate policy to people who haven't heard much about it yet or haven't had to experience it yet. But it's that great tool that being a part of junior farmers you can get from is we can teach you what you need to know, and then you can go out into the world and you can develop policy, or you can understand the policies that are coming through either through government or regulation.
Right on. And again, I just have to give you positive reinforcement, Jordan. The extent to which you just described the importance of policy and the fact that you're telling other young people that, a bravo, only because policy gets a bad rap. Like, a lot of people just think it's boring or it's things they don't want to know about, but you framed it perfectly. It's how we do things. It enables us to do things. It's where things begin. How did you get infected by such an optimistic or positive perspective? Because I wish more people kind of had that sense of agency, that sense of freedom, if I were to evoke the word, to engage in an area that more people should be engaged in.
I'm the kind of person where I love an instruction manual. I don't want to have to figure out how to do everything the first time. It's if there's a framework I can follow, or if there's a step-by-step process or instructions, it makes doing anything easier. Yes, you have to go outside of that and do some exploration and trial and error on your own. But if you have a solid framework, everything gets easier because you're not wasting time thinking about different ways of doing it. This is a way that works. This is what's helping. Go from there. So I grew up with a mother in government and a father in engineering. So we were a very policy-driven household. And it just, I was lucky to be in, grow up in that environment, and I kind of just had a knack for it. And even now, my partner's a lawyer, so he develops policy. And so it's, we're a very policy-driven household to begin with. But going forward, it's nice to kind of have this a starting off point or a jumping off point to know that this is how it works. We can go from there. And then that's where policy development gets even more exciting, is we already know how it works, but can we find a way to make it better? Can we find a way to make it more accessible or work better with a changing time? Policy development is so exciting because you get to write the rules essentially of how it's going to work and how to benefit other people from it.
And allow me to repeat my positive reinforcement of your attitude towards leadership, because most people who are immersed in the policy world the way you are, in terms of citing your parents and your partner, they tend to have an elitist attitude, right? That policy is our domain and we should keep everyone else out of it, versus you're the opposite. You're like, how do we infect people with the joy of policy? So here's the billion-dollar question. This entire episode has led up to this point. Here's the scenario. You're on a plane. You're coming back, let's say, from an ag conference out west. And sitting beside you is someone from the prime minister's office. And they kind of notice that you've got some conference material. They realize that you're in the ag world. And they say, hey, Jordan, you know what? We're working on this big ag policy framework, you know, and we're mobilizing the government to try to think of what's important when it comes to Canadian ag policy. What do you think? What would be your answer if you had that moment informally to speak directly to power? Well, what are the kind of crazy ideas that you'd put in their ear?
Well, it goes back to what I said earlier, is the people who are doing something every day are the best people to learn from that, because they're the ones who see it, the ins and out of it. They see it through. They know a lot about the topic that they're invested in. So when it comes to ag policy, it's nobody knows agriculture better than the farmers. So hearing their opinions or hearing what's going to work for them or how this regulation is going to affect them, that's the crucial part of developing ag policies. We need actual farmers and producers involved in writing it, because anyone can develop policy, but you need that agricultural background to know what this regulation is actually going to mean, or how it's actually going to pan out to the farmer and how it's going to affect them. And we need to know that, like, right now the big thing is the new high-speed rail, and like, where are they going to put that? And everyone's concerned, like, well, if you put it through my farm, I can no longer reach half my field because we can't cross a high-speed rail. So that's a big issue that we've been talking about right now, because they're thinking, oh, we just need open land and we need to make it as straight as possible. Great, but that open land is being used for food production and farming. How are the farmers going to access their land if you put this high-speed rail through it? And that's kind of an issue. So maybe talk to them about what works for them, or like how to best put in this rail system. Like, do we do underpasses, overpasses? How do we do this right? You need their opinions and you need their voices on it. So if every time I'm in front of a politician or anybody, it's, well, have you asked the farmers what they want? Have you asked their opinion on what you're doing? Because they're going to have something to say. They might agree with you, but they might disagree with you, but they're going to have an insight into this.
Okay, so I'm going to double down, and to use the baseball metaphor that I keep evoking throughout this podcast, I'm going to throw the fastest pitch, the hardest pitch I can, although to give you a moment to take a breath, I will, as an aside, say, I think Aalto's dead. I think the way in which they approached the lack of a consultation or the public relations side was so atrocious that if they really want high-speed rail, they're going to have to rebrand and try again. I digress. Here's the big hard question. I agree with you 100%, Jordan. I think the problem right now with the federal government is they don't understand consultation. They don't understand how to do participatory policy development. So, okay, the PMO says, Jordan, the PMO official sitting beside you on the plane says, Jordan, yeah, you're absolutely right. What's your pitch? What would the policy, the participatory policy process that you describe, it's kind of against our culture in the federal government. We're used to doing everything secretly and alone and then just telling everyone how to do it. If we were to give you the resources, Jordan, what would you have us do?
You need to have advisory groups. You need to say, hey, this is what we're planning, and you need to go in front of a group of farmers and producers and say, hey, this is what we're planning. What are your thoughts? How does this impact you? Go from there. Luckily, we have organizations already in place, whether it's junior farmers or something else, where we have the people here ready to give their opinion if you ask. So it's the federal or even the provincial government needs to reach out and be like, hey, this is what we're doing. How does it affect agriculture? And the ag industry will be the loudest person in the room telling you that's not going to work for us. It would work for us if you did this. Having that advisory group or the advisory panels is crucial because agriculture is such a big industry that it touches everything. So no matter what happens in policy or regulation or government, we should have some, there should be a voice in the back room saying, hey, but what about agriculture? What's it going to do? We need to have that voice and they need to be asking us, hey, how is this going to affect you?
Again, I agree 100%. But to carry out the role play, because I'm kind of thinking about what the response would be, I kind of think that they would react with fear. I kind of think that they would say, you know, Jordan, you're right. That would help us get a more legitimate policy. That would help us get a more effective policy that would actually reflect kind of on the ground practices. But we're scared. We like to control the process. We like to control what people are saying. This kind of involves us giving up control. And as a federal government, we don't want to do that. How do you address the fear that we have in opening up such a process?
Farmers are extremely reasonable people. If you give them the outlet to tell you, they'll fight back on you for less things because they'll have less reasons to oppose the government. As you give them that out, if you give them that outlet, everything gets easier because they will be willing to work with you 100%. They're going to do whatever's best for their farm and their industry. So they'll come and they'll play ball. They will work with you if you give them that opportunity to do so. And all that will do down the line is make it easier to pass policy or make it easier to integrate things better because you already have them here willing to work with you. So yes, absolutely. It's scary, but it would make so much, it would make everything easier.
Absolutely brilliant answer. And I think that that is exactly the value proposition, that they're afraid because they've been doing things the wrong way. And that's why there's hostility. But as soon as they start the conversation, things get easier, right? Things get more friendly. Things get more respectful because, correct me if I'm wrong, that has been the model of engagement within the sector all along, that people don't always get along, that there are often differences. But when you get people in the same room, kind of looking eye to eye, it's easier to find commonality rather than focus on differences.
No, very much agree. And I'll even say it, that translates into just being a young farmer in general is, yes, we're in the rooms and people like having us and like showing us off, but there's often that time where they don't take the opinion of the young person because it's like, oh, well, we've been doing this longer. We know better. So it's like, well, maybe young people would be more interested in joining your organizations or being a part of the industry if you gave them that outlet and you worked with them instead of having that fear of, oh, we know best. We're going to do what we want. Well, you want the young people in the industry, but then you don't take their opinions seriously. Well, if you start working with them and taking their opinions seriously, it'll be so much easier down the road to integrate things or to have new ideas. So embracing the young people in our industry is going to be the best way to move it forward because there's more people thinking of solutions. There's more people working to a common goal, making it easier. Young people are a resource that everyone should be tapping into because it helps with just the continuity of your organization or of your industry when you're constantly bringing in the people, giving them the support and putting them in the leadership roles that they deserve to be in or that they've worked and shown that they believe that they're going to be good in.
Well, and let's take a moment as we wrap to try to operationalize that. What would be the tips or the one or two things that you would advise an agricultural organization, an association, whether a broad one or a specific one, that wants to have better youth engagement, that wants to have a more youth participation, what are the tangible things they can do to make that happen?
Reaching out to your young people is the best way to do that. Like having a seat at the table for them, through junior farmers we've been lucky to work with, the Ontario Federation of Agriculture or the Christian Farmers of Ontario, that we can have one of our people in their local rooms. Or we've done a lot of things where they're having an AGM, well, we'll send people to be there. We'll go to lobby day with the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. We'll send our young people with them so that they're integrated with what they're doing. They're seeing what we're doing. Having those connections is the best way to bring us in. And if they give us the option to be in their circles, we'll, like, we have people lined up ready to go. We'll happily send someone to be a part of their organization so we can take back information and bring it to us. But then as well as, hey, we have a slew of young people ready to go and ready to act on these things. Just give them the opportunity and they'll be there.
Right on. Is there anything we didn't talk about today that you think we should address? Anything that you think is pressing in the ag sector or ignored and underemphasized that we should talk about?
I think just the utilization of young people is, we are here, we are eager, we have our youth, we have our health, we're ready to go. Using us as a resource is the best way to help all organizations, because we're ready to go. Continuity is always an issue, because yes, you have all of these people with all of great resources, but you age out, you move on, you go to something different, and then you lose that knowledge set. Well, the younger you start them, the longer you have them, and the more you can use that and get their knowledge and use them continuously through that, the better we can be invested in an industry that we've spent our entire lives in. So utilizing the young people, reaching out, we don't have infinite resources. Everything costs money. Everything takes time. Taking that into consideration, if you want to support young people, you need to support young people in agriculture. If you want to use them, we need to work together to be able to do that.
Right on, right on. Absolutely. And I think a key point you made was to actually do the outreach and invite them and not just expect them to show up, but actually entice them to come, because they do have limited time. They do have competing priorities. So you do want to make them valued. So the last question that I like to end the podcast on is the shout outs part of the show. Who are the leaders who inspire you, whether past or present tense? Who are the folks that you kind of pay attention to, who you think the rest of us should be paying attention to?
No, I definitely think to plug junior farmers as a whole, we have a bunch of great people who are doing things. We are a group of 15 to 30 year olds from across Ontario. We have local clubs in almost every region. So if someone wants to be involved, they can be. We have a lot of great people who are doing great things. And then moving on, I was lucky that the OFA really helped me and really gave me the tools to kind of move throughout the ag industry as I have. I had some really great professors at school that saw my talent and saw my interest in it and was like, hey, you should do more with the Ontario Federation of Agriculture because they're going to give you that platform. And then I went to my local OFA meeting and I was the youngest only female in the room. So they were like, hey, what's your opinion? And the first meeting I showed up to, I ended up getting elected as a local director with our Niagara Federation of Agriculture. And I've been on that for years now. And then through my work with them, they were like, hey, we used to have this thing called Junior Farmers back in the day. You're young enough. It was a very good thing. And I'm like, cool, I'll look into that. And then I did that. And I've managed to work my way to the point where I'm now the president of that organization. And it's just amazing that we're all interconnected and there's always someone willing to champion you. As long as you're dedicated and willing to put in the work, someone will be there to help you.
Right on, right on. Thank you very much. Well, this has been a fantastic tour de force. If anything, you offer a model of leadership that is both generous, but also ambitious. And quite frankly, that is exactly the kind of leadership in our sector that we need, to the point of making policy fun and imaginative. That in and of itself is a kind of revolutionary act. And here's the ask, Jordan. I mean, the whole point of the future herd is we don't want to just do one-offs and find incredible people like yourself and be like, hey, how's it going? Okay, goodbye. We want to bring you back. We want to have panels and group discussions and get you helping us to find other leaders. Is that something you'd be down for?
Of course. It's the best part of being in this industry is seeing the future talent that's there and being in a position where I get to help foster and find those people is amazing. Whether it's through junior farmers or OFA, or I do a lot of speaking at high schools to people about agriculture, being like, hey, look how fun agriculture is. Look how fun ag policy development is when you get to be the ones setting the rules and like coming up with the new ways to make things better. It's so exciting. It's a puzzle that never ends, and it's amazing. So yes, no, this is my favorite part of my job, is the outreach and the finding of new people. I'm happy to do it. Give me the platform, I will do it. I love it.
Right on. That's fantastic. Well, thanks again, Jordan. This has been a fantastic episode, and we'll definitely have to do this again.
Thank you very much. This was amazing, and yeah, I've enjoyed hearing all of them so far, so looking forward to more.
There's a tendency to talk about the next generation as if it's waiting somewhere, fully formed, just needing a door to open. This conversation makes that idea feel flimsy. What Jordan points to instead, without ever quite spelling it out, is that there isn't a next generation sitting in reserve. Instead, there are only partial trajectories. People who got a glimpse early, and people who didn't. People who were pulled in, and people who learned to look elsewhere. The difference isn't ambition. It's proximity, opportunity. And proximity is designed, not formally, not through policy, but through habits, through culture, through who gets brought along to a meeting, who gets trusted with something small, who gets spoken to as if their perspective already counts. If there's something unresolved at the end of this episode, it's this. The sector keeps asking how to bring people in while continuing to reproduce the conditions that keep most people out. Jordan doesn't offer a fix, but she does leave us with a sense of discomfort. A sense that the future isn't blocked, but it is quietly being filtered. And that filter is close enough to touch. But this is why I think we have ample room for hope and, dare I say it, even optimism. More and more people are interested in their food and where their food comes from and the people who help make that food possible. Fundamentally, this isn't about sharing stories with them or even necessarily being transparent. Instead, this is about engaging people on their terms, in their spaces, using their language. And that's why I think leaders like Jordan represent an incredible opportunity to not just strengthen the existing assets of the sector, but to invite new people to the table, to invite a whole lot more young people to the table, so that maybe we have new ideas, new ways of doing things that benefit everyone. Now, one last note before we end. I have, as I mentioned last time, been playing with the intro music and the outro music. It looks like so far we're a go. So if anyone wants to tweet or hit me up on social media and identify the songs that we're currently using and why, there will be a toy inside, a prize for you. So we'll see if anyone has the leadership to take me up on this challenge. Until next time, we'll see you here on The Future Herd.